right, welcome to another episode of Out from the Cube. We are north of 150. That's all I know right now as we roll these out. I do know that we're north of 150. I'm George Evian, your host, with our co-host, Joe Quinn. Joe, good to see you again.
Yes, another week. Looking forward to another exciting episode here. So we've got a great guest. I think everybody's going to be excited.
Very excited about this episode, and you know, and opening up your network and the people you're meeting has really helped us and our audience. Hopefully, we've had some amazing guests on the past 3 or 4 weeks, and very grateful for the connections that you're making for all of us. So today's guest is Carol Morgan Worth. She's a connection of yours that you have through a community of executives, I guess, here in the St. Louis area, and people with similar interests in leadership and team dynamics and team development. So with that being said, Carol, welcome to our podcast, Out from the Cube. We appreciate you making time for us today.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. I love talking about leadership. And so let's go.
Yeah. Perfect. She's ready. Go ahead, Joe.
No, I was saying she's ready.
Yeah, let's go. So the one thing I am interested, you are, and I don't know too much about the group that you're both a part of. Joe's mentioned it a few times, and maybe a few of our guests have, that has been Joe's connection. Tell me real quick, Carol, about that program that you and Joe are a part of here in St. Louis, and how long you've been a part of it, what it does for you, what it does for the community, and things of that nature.
Sure, I would love to. The organization that Joe and I met, it's called Executive Connections. It is a St. Louis-based company. It's been around probably now over 10 years, 10 plus years.
Yeah, it's over
10. And it really kind of started off just as a grassroots organization of leaders, senior leaders, trying to help each other. You know, St. Louis is a small community, and as a executive, it's not always easiest to find a job once you're in transition. Right. You really do have to use a network, and who you know matters. And so this organization just continued to grow. I think we're well over 300 members now. And the most interesting thing about it is a private organization. You have to be screened and go through board interviews to be accepted. And the reason is the organization is looking for individuals that want to give back, right? The whole group, the whole organization really focuses on helping every single leader that comes in transition, meaning we pledge a lifelong forever to help other people network and get connected to other leaders to find their next career position. And so it's really quite unique. I don't know that it exists anywhere else, and it's something special St. Louis has.
And you've been a part of that, I think you said offline, for a number of years, maybe going up on 10 years. If it started 10 years ago, you've been with them 8 or 9 then, right?
Yeah, I was one of the early members. When I was in transition, when I left, I was running a consulting firm, and I left there, and that's when I joined them back in 2012. And I've been an active member ever since.
That's great. So now what are you doing? I do have your website up here in front of me, and have done a little bit of research on you and your company and what you do. But can you fill us in real quick on what you do and your company?
Sure. Just a little history. I had a career in big corporate and running small businesses and consulting firms for about 30 years, kind of dates me, in St. Louis. Very successful career. And honestly, I chucked it all at the end of 2018 to finally really kind of do my own thing. I wouldn't call it retirement, but it sure feels like it after my what I did in my career. But I started a couple businesses. The one we're here to talk about is Worth Leadership and Coaching. And so over the past year and a half, I've developed a practice really focused on leadership, and leadership in the sense of you're the leader of your life. So I really coach both personally and professionally, whether it be small business owners, you know, just individuals that are in transition, or, senior leaders that are in corporate, you name it. But my niche is really focused on that. I have a belief that through self-development and self-awareness is how you really grow to become the strongest version of leader that you can be. It really comes from knowing yourself and knowing your strengths, your weaknesses. And a lot of people just don't, you know, they don't take the time to do that. A lot of leaders don't do that and they're missing
it. So do you think, cause you're, you know, if I'm looking at your background, like your experiences and the path that you took, I would say is probably not atypical. I mean, you have worked in a lot of different functions, probably put yourself in, I'm assuming, in positions that maybe you weren't the most comfortable. I would definitely would like to learn about, you know, how your past experience, because you've done some IT, some operations, you know, you've been through with, you know, big companies, family owned as well. Like, how has some of those experience shaped you? I guess, would you do anything differently, you know, looking back?
Yeah, in terms of my career, it's a great question. It's interesting. I didn't plan it the way that it turned out, sure. But in hindsight, you know, I feel very, very fortunate. I always kind of went from one job to another or sought after my next position based on my heart, what I really wanted and what I felt like was the right fit for me. And maybe at the time I didn't really necessarily know what I was doing, but it did lead to this very awesome career that led me from senior executive positions in big, large corporations like Edward Jones and Mallinckrodt and Bunge and McDonnell Douglas and Washington University. And those roles spanned both the technology side of the organization as well as the business side. And so, you know, kind of sitting on both sides of the table was just created just awesome perspective. And then I went into consulting and I led first a technology and management consulting firm, fairly large. It was probably at the time maybe a total of 1,000 employees across 5 different branches. And so that was a whole nother interesting perspective, right? Sitting again at a different side of the table. And then I went on to lead a healthcare audit consulting firm for a couple of years. And then finally, before I finally gave it all up, I was a general partner at Edward Jones, kind of back in technology. And, you know, I think what I learned is just, and that's why I'm doing what I'm doing now, is that I attribute my success to the early, I was fortunate, companies invested in me in leadership development. And I think that that's lacking today in a lot of companies. Leaders, young leaders are not getting that kind of exposure. And I truly, you know, I attribute leadership for my success. Going into all of those different jobs, I was not a SME. I didn't know all those functions, right? Whether it was operations or quality or consulting or I knew how to lead and I knew how to get things done through people. And again, at the time, I don't think I knew all that, but I grew up with the Blanchards, Ken Blanchard, Stephen Covey, John Maxwell's. And like I said, I was really fortunate to be in a lot of kind of young leadership development, high potential kind of things. And that benefited me. Yeah. And so a big part of what I am hoping to do in my career, a little bit of giving back, but help others really understand the power of just pure what leadership really is.
Yeah. I want to get into my initial questions as I looked at your website were to kind of get into these bullet points because they actually were impactful to me as I read them, just in trying to reflect on where I'm at, what I'm doing, what I'm saying, and the energy, I guess, that I'm trying to give to my teams. But you said something really interesting, and I'm interested in your perspective on it. And this is how I took what you said, or at least the example that popped into my head, was I'm in the software world as well. And this idea that there's not enough time and people that are coming up and just starting their professional careers, this idea of, you know, creating leaders and giving them the equipment and the tools and the knowledge so they can build those skills. But my initial thought with that is in the software world, my experience. I've only been in the software world for now 13 or so years. What seems to happen in the software world is the best developer, the best person to write code, the person that can churn out the most or whatever it is, or ends up being a tech lead or whatever it is, ends up getting, you know, promoted. Now they're a manager, right? So I had a very good friend in my first job here in St. Louis, and he was the best. He was the best developer around. And because of that, he kept moving up the chain, but then he was in management all of a sudden, where he's managing people, managing teams, going through all this. And I remember having drinks with him one night saying, George, I just want to write code. I don't want any part of this. I'm not good at it. I don't care for it, you know, and things like that. But I'm interested in your one, like, I wonder why that happens. I wonder why we just assume because somebody's really talented at one skill of that they should automatically be management or a leader or something along those lines. And then I guess the follow-up to that would be, what can we do to help those people that, like, hey, yeah, I'm really good. I'm sitting in a cubicle and I'm selling, I'm writing code, I'm doing something really well. Somebody's acknowledging it and promoting me, but I'm not ready for that yet. How do I get ready for that? What can I do? I know that's a two-part question, but I wonder why we do that to people and then I wonder what we can do to support those people.
Yeah, first of all, I don't think that phenomenon is limited to technology, right? Mm. I think that happens definitely everywhere. Mm. The SMEs, the folks that are really good at executing whatever it happens to be, whether it's coding or something else, often are the ones that are promoted. I think it is, I'm sure you've heard the Peter Principle.
Mm.
Yes.
No, I have not.
That's I don't think I have.
You know, that's what it is. The Peter Principle is basically you're promoted to your level of incompetence.
Mm.
And some of that is just because, you know, when maybe the leaders that are doing the promoting don't know what is really required for leadership, but those kinds of individuals, even if they have the potential, they're not given the time, the training, and the tools to make the shift, because what got them to that point, the skills that got them promoted, are not the skills that they need to go to the next step. They're not the same skills, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think it's just a natural part of the process. And that's really what I have found, is that leaders, you know, take on leadership positions and they're never really given, the training that they need to truly dissect, okay, well, what do I need to do different, right? What do I need to continue to do? What do I need to stop doing? And what do I need to take on as new? Mm. Unless somebody is truly, truly aware, self-aware, right, and diligent in their own self-development, either they learn it through just hard knocks, right, or they never learn it at all. And I think most people that I talk to feel that leadership is probably the least skill inside most companies.
Leader. I can definitely remember many times where the top salesperson within your group would get promoted to an open sales manager position, two completely different skill sets, right?
Right.
And, you know, it actually hurt the overall team. I mean, it's amazing. So it's,
I believe that leaders are developed, not born. I think every type of individual can be a good leader in the right setting at the right time with the right training, right? And the right attitude. And so, you know, for somebody like a developer whose job has been kind of heads down and detail orientation and, you know, much more solo kind of work, what I believe and what I help my clients do is to really understand themselves and to really understand what their strengths are for that leadership role. And then leverage those strengths. So I have a philosophy of maximizing, right? So Joe, you as a leader bring something different to the table than George as a leader. Doesn't make you better or worse than George, right? Kind of depends on the situation, the team, what's needed. And I believe you know, when I work with my clients, it's about truly understanding your passion. I call it the leadership sweet spot. It's where your competence matches to your passion and matches the intersection to the organizational need. So where those three things come together, your personal passions, your natural gifts and skills and knowledge that you've gotten, right? Both that you're born with, as well as, you know, what you've learned, and then whatever, you know, the organization or department or team needs. If you can truly carve out that sweet spot, that's when you're going to be most successful. But unfortunately, what people often do is they don't realize what their own strengths are, right? Or their natural inclination. So use a typical developer, technical person. A lot of those individuals really don't want to do leadership. They don't want to be that people leader, right? But they take that promotion because it's kind of what society tells us is successful. It's what success looks like, right? And so they take that job, and then oftentimes they're miserable because they don't like the work.
Right.
And so,
what if somebody has the, they know what they're like, they know their strengths, they know their opportunities. What do they do with that? What do you recommend? How do I use that information?
Follow your heart. You know, if you truly do know what your strengths are and your passions, your natural inclinations, the more that you can put yourself right in that sweet spot, the more successful you will be, because it's natural, right? Nobody will win. You know, if you, when you think about strengths and weaknesses, everybody has both, right? It's just the way we're born. And you can focus on weaknesses to the extent it, you know, you do have to plug the gaps. So if you're not a person that's got strong organizational skills, you still gotta, you gotta get by, right? But you're never gonna win. You're never going to reach your highest potential by focusing on the things that you're not naturally inclined and that are your natural strengths, right? You can get by, but you're never gonna excel. You'll never get to that thrive point. So if your natural strengths are in collaboration or communication or heads down detail orientation, whatever those natural inclinations are, when you can find roles that fit that, you'll soar and you'll feel it. Not only will you soar in success, you'll feel it in your heart because it feels good.
Yeah. The word that you've used more than any other word, I shouldn't say that. You've used this word a number of times, and it's just resonating with me because it was an impactful word for me in 2019 or 2018. But you've used the word self-awareness a number of times. And, you know, on a very, you know, elementary level, you know, why is that important? And what is it? And why should we even consider that? Because I've heard that for years, right? We've all heard that. But for some reason, it just hit me in 2019. I listened to a lot of Gary V, Gary Vaynerchuk, and that guy, that is a principal word of his, just, and that is like where development starts. And so I'm interested in, and I see it on your website and things like that. Why is that a phrase or a word that you cling to that when it comes to people development, leadership development? Why is that so important?
So from a development perspective, regardless of leadership or any of that, it all starts with self-awareness. You can't, until you truly are aware of your behaviors, aware of your thoughts and your feelings, you can't either leverage them intentionally, nor can you intentionally prevent them from causing you to go down rat holes, right? So, you know, I believe every individual is born with certain strengths and natural gifts. I use, I'll tie this in. So in my practice, I use two tools as part of my self-discovery processes. One's called the Enneagram and one is called Clifton Strength Finders. And I like these two tools because unlike most of the tools that especially business professionals get exposed to, like Myers-Briggs or DISC, as an example, those tools, for the most part, kind of label your external behavior. They put a label on it, right? And it does some things to help you understand yourself. But what the Enneagram and the Clift Strength Finders do is try to understand why you do what you do, which is a whole different dimension. And the minute you can begin to understand why you do what you do, meaning what are your core internal motivations? What are your core needs, right? Mm. What are your core fears? And how is that then displaying in your external behaviors? When you begin to dissect that, really all that internal hard work, you become able to make more conscious choices around what you want to do with whatever that is, right? If you can, a lot of us can unconsciously be put in a situation, let's say at work, where we're maybe a little anxious, right? But we might not admit it, and it causes us to act or behave or more readily react in ways that are not going to actually be beneficial for us or the people around us. And so that whole self-awareness becomes the tool to, again, just become way more intentional. And then I'll use the word vulnerable. And this kind of gets into authentic leadership. You know, the strongest leaders are those people that can recognize the things that they bring to the table and recognize those things that they'd be better served, and so would the organization, if they leveraged other people to do those things, right? Leadership comes from being able to say to your organization, this is what I'm good at, this is what I'm not good at, right? And being vulnerable in that. And a lot of leaders won't do that, right? They won't show that side of themselves. Yep.
You know, one of the activities that I've always done, I use the DISC assessment. I wasn't aware of some of the other ones that you just mentioned, but everybody has strengths and opportunities, right? And it's you got to just be comfortable admitting it. And I mean, I would literally force my team, what's your strengths, what's your opportunities, you know, and I would review that. But I was very, the first time when I take over a new team, I'm telling them exactly who I am. They have my DISC assessment. You know, there's, in my opinion, there's no time to waste for you all to try to figure out who I am. Like, here's what the DISC assessment says about me. Here's what I'm going to tell you that I think I am and what I've gotten feedback on. And I'll tell you what I like. I'll tell you what I don't like. It is what it is. We all have them. Like, but this is kind of the framework that I'm in my mind, and this is how I work. And then, you know, I would try to press that down into the organization, because you got to find out, in my opinion, where are the strengths and opportunities of your team, and then try to match these perfect jobs for some of them. Some of the activities you can move around, right? Some of them you can't. Sometimes you just got to live with it. It's an activity that you have to do or whatever. Somebody, you know, not everybody on your team may like it, but somebody's going to get forced to do it. But I think it kind of goes to a lot of the things you've talked about, really kind of understanding it. You know, in the question even George asked, like understanding these things, but then it's one thing to understand them, but if you don't act on them, it ain't going to do you any good, right? Yeah. Like, it's like, how do you get it down to the next level?
Yeah, that's been the problem for me that I'm trying to solve with 2012 or 2021 is more action, you know, learning these things. I am going to plug, we don't plug too many things here. Not that people are going to be running out or we're going to get any kickback on this, but there's a great book called Strengths-Based Leadership. It's a great book. I have read this, and it's strength-based leadership, great leaders, teams, and why people follow. But along the lines of what you're both saying, of being able to identify as a leader, identify the strengths in your group and your team, and get people, you know, I use the John Gordon stuff of, you know, getting the right people on the bus is one thing, but then getting them in the right seats on the bus is the second thing, right? And making sure people are doing the right thing.
Right.
And all that. You just mentioned, George, you know, the formation of a team, right? So whether it's a leader who's building their leadership team, or whether, you know, it's a department, or, you know, the most powerful team is a collection of diverse skill sets, perspectives, mm-hmm. and capabilities. That's the best team, right? And most people, especially leaders that haven't gone through a lot of this kind of self-awareness, development, mm-hmm. leadership training, a lot of times they surround themselves with the people just like them.
Yep.
And that's not a strong team.
Well, it's
way, you know, too many blind spots, because you have no mm-hmm. counterbalance. And so that's another aspect of this whole, you know, once you begin to truly understand strengths and weaknesses, it starts not only to help you, starts to help you in how do you relate and value and respect everybody else around you.
Yeah. To Joe's point, and it's really, I don't know if it's a struggle for everybody. It's definitely a struggle with me. You know, a friend of mine that has been on the podcast a number of times wrote a book called The Things We Know But Do Not Do. I believe, and I hope I'm getting that right. It's a book by Jason Wells. And it's like, we know this stuff, you know, and this idea of, you know, of self, now the phrase is burning and now I'm not remembering the phrase, but self-awareness, this idea of self-awareness, like I can think about all this stuff, but then me acting on it, or, me making changes. I really liked, and I don't have the page open, with what, you, with it on your website, but you've already mentioned it. You mentioned self-awareness and development. There was a third prong in there, that I didn't catch, but it's about being self-aware, being vulnerable, knowing what you may are good at and what you just are garbage at, and being okay with it, and that's being right. absolutely okay. The word that keeps coming into my mind as I listen to you both talk, one is, and I'm being very selfish here, like I've got to take more action. I know my blind spots to a certain extent. I'm sure I have many more of them. I need to take more action. You know, the other one is just really trying to take that action and develop and make these changes that I need to make, to be the leader that I can be to my team, my family, my community, or whatever it is. But that seems to be the hardest thing for people to do, is to take those steps and create action, create momentum, and try to make that lasting change.
No, I agree. And I think you mentioned that word vulnerability, but, you know, and Carol too, about, you know, getting people that have expertise, surround yourself with experts in different areas. But, you know, there's value in coming up and telling somebody like, hey, you're a lot better at this than me. Can you help me here? Like that's boosting to that person. So, you know, when you really start understanding the strengths and opportunities of your team, you know, if you come up to say, hey, I'm not very good at this IT stuff and this is right up your wheelhouse, can you help me out? Like, you just boosted that person's morale. You know, yes. Are you kind of being a little bit vulnerable? Sure. But you understand where you stand. They understand it is what it is. We all have strengths and opportunities. Sometimes you just got to be uncomfortable admitting that you're not the best at everything. And unfortunately, I think we have a lot of leaders that want to act like I know everything and I can do everything. And reality is they just can't. And it hurts the overall organization.
Yeah, I think we still have, especially in the large, and say that leadership in general, there's still a lot of very top-down, directive kind of. It's sure. You know, leaders tend to just be very directive or completely hands-off, and neither of those styles work 100% of the time, right? They just don't. And you know, a leader really has to meet their people where their people are, and so you. That idea, again, kind of going back to not only understanding yourself, but understanding the strengths and weaknesses of your people. Because as a leader, you know, you have to help provide them what they need in order for them to grow and develop as well.
Yeah.
And that looks different for every single person, right?
The third word that you had up here was self-awareness, development. And then the third one that I'm still trying to fine tune is transformation, right? Those were the three things on the website. No, and I appreciate when I read that today, I was like, man, that's really good, because I I'm definitely on the train of self-awareness and always trying to figure out things that I can do better or where my pitfalls are. But you have some, I wanted to hit on some of these bullet points that are on your website because they hit me, they resonated me. I guess that's why you have them up there to grab people. But the third one I really like because I'm on the last part of this sentence. I'm on the last part of this. It's top of mind for me. But learn to lead and live authentically and become your best self. Right. Yeah. And this idea of becoming your best self is definitely top of mind for me in 2021. I'm actually reading a book right now from Mike Baer called Best Self, Be Only You But Better. Mike Baer is kind of famous in that he does work with Dr. Phil on the Dr. Phil show. He's a great guy and a great book. But this idea of becoming your best self, why that's hitting me so much this year is you know, I love the topic and the passion that I have for leadership and team dynamics and trying to impact people and trying to build our teams and all this. But now I'm really caught up in that. I think I can do a better job if I really identify and work towards my best self of what that is, who it is, what it looks like, feels like, sounds like, and all that. And so I'm actually spending a lot of time in trying to be very self-aware of what my best self is. Yeah. But I feel like that will enable me to just lead better and maybe have more of an impact and things like that. But you have it up there on your website. Why is this idea of, and I'm taking that as personal development, right? Of being, you know, of being very self-aware and all that. But why is it so important for us to take that journey of our best self and what that is?
So I love that you asked that question. If you look under the covers to that statement and why it's up there is based upon my use and my coaching around the Enneagram. And the Enneagram is a tool that helps us to understand. I don't want to get into a whole bunch of details, but it kind of categorizes. There's 9 types in the Enneagram model and all different variations of those 9 types. Mm-hmm. Within each of those 9 types, as an example, I'm a type 8. It's called the challenger. And every type has very clear levels of development. There's 9 of them. And it's a model that really, truly helps us deal with, gives us a framework. Of course, it's not a silver bullet. But it gives us a framework for that transformation, because once you understand your type and you go through various processes to do that, but once you get there and you understand your type, with that comes an understanding of kind of what I said, why you do what you do, fears, needs, core longings, the things that kind of you were naturally born with, like, are you a head person or a heart person, right? Some of those things start to come out within the framework of this tool. And the tool helps us then to begin to do just what that line says, become our best self. I, as a type 8, will never become a type 1. I will never change all those core longings, fears that I have, but I do learn to respond, manage, and handle them differently, which helps me to become much healthier, right? A much healthier type 8. And that's really the concept of becoming the best version of yourself. That's where that line comes from.
I really like it. And it was, there's a lot going on here how do you say the word again? Enneagram?
Called the Enneagram. And Enneagram. It's interesting. It's a tool that's been around for centuries. No one author of it. It has been, you know, the contribution of many scholars and historians and all. It's fascinating once you actually start getting into it. Mm-hmm. But the purpose of the Enneagram, again, unlike a Myers-Briggs or DISC, isn't just to label you. First, identifying that label is the first step, but that's just the beginning. The use of the tool then comes from the work afterward and really trying to understand what it means. And it's all really more internal work than it is around, you know, if you're a D and I'm an I, how should I deal with you? It's not about that. right? It's about I'm an eight. And what does that mean? How do I become the best eight I can be? And so, it's all internally focused. And of course, then through that, you also begin to improve your relationships because you understand other people's core motivations and fears and needs. And there's becomes a lot more compassion in your relationships for the people around you.
So this assessment, I want to make sure I understand, put you in one of nine kind of categories. Okay. So once you have determined that you're an eight, so do you spend more time trying to be really good and be like the best eight ever? Or do you try to spend time in other categories and say, look, I'm not very good at, you know, the one, two, three, and four. So like, how do you coach people, or what do you do with that now that you have it? Or where are you spending your time?
Yeah, the idea of the Enneagram is that, you know, you're born a dominant type. It doesn't change. So, you know, you, of course, over years of experience, get learned behaviors, right? Yep. But in essence, you're born a certain temperament. You're born with certain those core motivations that I keep talking about. Mm-hmm. So your job is really to become the best eight you can be. You'll never be a one because you're an eight. Right. But there is literally in the tool, there's nine levels of development around how you become, what kinds of things all of us, our personality traits, the Enneagrams, the concept is how do you learn to control your personality as opposed to your personality controlling you. And because of that, then you can temper the things that your personality does to get you in trouble, and you can strengthen, right? Sure. And highlight the things that are, you know, the natural gifts and strengths that you bring into the world.
I wonder how much time we need to spend as leaders, and even personally. Like once you identify your strengths and all that, but you're enhancing and trying to level up your things you're just not as great at, or do I just double down on all my strengths? You know, if I'm not a good writer, right, and being asked to do all this other stuff, but I'm good at X, am I going to try to build this weakness up, or am I just going to go deep in the things that I'm strong in? And then what should I do with my team? You know, should I try to put my teams in position so their weaknesses become strengths, or, hey, we're just going to double down on what everybody does well. And that is how we, as a team, get to the next level.
Yeah. You know, my two cents is, again, I'm a maximizer. I think you're going to get the greatest return, whether it be return for yourself and how you feel, or money, or, and the greatest return from your team when everyone is doing what they're most naturally gifted at. Yeah. Now, having said that, that doesn't mean that if somebody's not good with time management, that they get to be late all the time, right? There's entry fees, right? There's like entry level fees that you just have to buck up to, right? Yep. And you got to fix. But somebody like that spending all their time trying to just be totally organized to the nth degree, For what end game, right? Mm-hmm. If they're a creative and they soar with new ideas, why would you want them spending their time here?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Again, it's the concept of, you know, what is the return you're getting for your level of effort? Mm-hmm. And your level of effort doing things that are your strengths will return by far more in blessings, right? Than anything in trying to solve, you know, like, I'm not good at sports, so why would I do that to myself?
I guess the problem would wind up being if you have somebody, or if you yourself have weaknesses, but those weaknesses are your passion, then you're just really horrible at that, really horrible at things you love, right? I love the guitar. Love it. Absolutely love the guitar. And have
dreams. Then you just probably better not try to make money doing that.
Yeah, but I'm absolutely horrible at that thing, right? So me spending my time there is probably not that wise. So we have about 5 or so minutes left. One of the things that, so I'll start with my last question now, knowing that we've got at least 5 more minutes of questions. So one of the things that I like to do at the end of with our guests is I'm kind of on this kick as well, like the self-awareness thing, my best self, like those are things that are very much top of mind for me and continue to be. One thing that I'm really what just kind of, it just keeps hitting me in the face because it hit me again yesterday, is this idea of celebration. Happened twice, actually happened very early this morning. And maybe I'm just seeing it more now because I'm on. We lost Joe for a second. But this idea of celebration, and this is what I mean by celebration. I think it's, you are, I use the phrase, you are what you celebrate. I forgot where I heard that from. And this idea of always having people with you that you can celebrate with. Most people, or we try to be very, very humble and modest and things of that nature when great things happen to us. But I do think you need these people in your life that you're sitting around saying, you know, like Joe's that guy. Joe's somebody like that for me. If something great happens in my life professionally or personally, I know I can call Joe and he's not going to think I'm full of myself or arrogant or anything. He's going to be like, he's going to celebrate it with me. Right. And there, I bring this up one because somebody on my team today sent this amazing email or text message out on our team's channel, just acknowledging and celebrating this great of stuff, this great release with our team. And I was like, man, that's perfect. Like we've got to have this idea of celebration. Then yesterday, something great has happened with my wife and her professional career. Something great, really, really good for my wife. And she comes home yesterday from being out on the road, taking our daughter somewhere. And she was on the phone with somebody celebrating this. And I was like, how awesome is that? That people have this, this idea of who they can celebrate with. So with that being the background, I want you to tell us something great that has happened for you professionally that... Now, granted, you may not take credit for it. Like I did this. I would love it if you did. Like, hey, I did this and it was awesome. Like, and I just felt great about it. Right. What has happened for you professionally when you look back on it and say, you know what? That is one of the single greatest things that has happened to me professionally. An accomplishment or something you did with a team or something along those lines that you want to celebrate or that you remember.
Wow. I'm very fortunate. There's probably a number of things that I would bring up, but I will bring up one that I am very proud of. I had been chosen as most influential businesswoman back in, heck, I think it was 2011 when I was running one of the consulting firms. It was a great honor. Mm. On all kinds of levels. And I, yes, I'm proud of myself for the accomplishments that, I achieved, but I achieved that through people and leadership and teams. It was when I basically transformed a consulting company and really moved them from kind of like a staff aug firm to more of a consulting kind of competing with the national firms. And it was quite a transformation. Mm. And during that same time, we grew, we cut attrition in half. There was just so much goodness, but I did that basically by aligning and leading people and getting them engaged. And I feel good about that.
No question. When that company makes those changes, And you lead it. You're the tip of the spear with that and trying to make that transformation. Is that something that they tasked you with? Or is that something you said, we're capable of more, we're capable of better, and this is how I see us. And if you give me the leash, I'll get us there. Like, how does that go?
Yeah, it was more the latter. My persona is a builder fixer. I'm not good at structure or operating. Just kind of give me a blank sheet of paper or give me a big mess. Mm. That's where I thrive. And in this particular situation, the owner, had been in business for 20 years and had an awesome vision, but was a kind of what we went back to. He was a SME, right? He never was in any other company. He started his own company very young. So he didn't have the leadership skills. Mm. And I came in with all my corporate background and I was able to breathe life into his vision, right? And make it happen. Not that I thought of the strategies, but he had the strategies, but couldn't actually harness the organization and align it, reorganize it, all the leadership stuff you got to do, right? Yeah. To make it happen. And that was my sweet spot. And I thrived. So kind of going back to what I meant by know your strengths. Mm. Like, you know, I'm not an operator. I'm not a good structure. And so what led me to that company was that my prior role had shifted into kind of day-to-day operations. Mm. And it was not a good fit for me. Mm. And so I left.
That's great. I appreciate you sharing that story. So it was, tell me the award that you ended up winning again.
Most influential businesswoman. It was the St. Louis Business Journal. Chooses, I think, maybe 20 women every year.
That's really cool.
For that recognition. Yeah, it's awesome.
No, that's good. I appreciate you sharing that with us. Well, to wrap this up a little bit, I really appreciate this hour. And I pinged Joe earlier this afternoon, just to confirm we had you on, because my day started getting away from me in terms of the commitments I have with my job. And I was like, man, I think we may have to cancel. And I went back and forth and back and forth and up just because I got so busy. And I'm so glad we didn't. I'm so glad that we had this opportunity to visit.
I am too. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
How can people track you down?
Well, my website's worthleadership.com. And you can send me an email through there or phone or.
Okay. Worth with a W-I-R-T-H, worthleadership.com. I'm looking at it here online. And I'll make sure that's in our show notes so people can access that. I'll also, is LinkedIn a good way as well for people to track?
Yeah, I'm definitely in LinkedIn too.
Okay. So
Carol Morgan, Worth.
Okay. We'll have all your information on there. I really appreciate that hour. There's going to be, there's always good takeaways. There's, you know, and it's this idea of self-awareness, of being and making these transformations, right? Of development. That's what I take away. Self-awareness, development, transformation, building on my strengths, you know, taking action like Joe was commenting on and making sure that, that as we assemble our teams with where I work, that we're always aware of where we're at, but also where our team is at, what they hope to be doing and where their strengths are and how they can continue to push us forward. Because just much like what you said, you transformed a really big organization, changed that company, changed people's lives, changed the clients' lives, because that was your strength. Somebody gave you the leash and said, hey, this is what you're good at, go do it. And you knocked it out of the park. And you had that great impact on a company and on families and on a community. And that's what, you know, those are good, great takeaways from me today. So, but I'll make sure all your stuff is in the show notes. Joe, appreciate you setting this up. And Carol, I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Take care.